In Cleveland, something over 90% of the Jews contribute to the United Jewish Appeal. Of that same community, slightly more than 55% are affiliated with congregations. And of that same community, slightly less than 15% will attend worship on any given weekend. We define ourselves as a community of faith, concerned with a single religious tradition. But it's probably better to define us as a community of fate, concerned primarily with the survival of Jews, of Jewry. You'll recall that in the halachic tradition, a Jew is defined as anyone who has a Jewish mother. And only in a subordinate clause of that definition do we have the addition of an issue of faith, or anyone who is accepted into the covenant of Abraham our father. A Jew is anyone who has a Jewish mother or who converts into our tradition. During the early years of the emancipation, many Jews were scandalized with this familial sociological definition of a Jew. They wanted to be known as Germans or as Frenchmen or as Englishmen or as Americans of Jewish persuasion. And so they wanted the label Jew to define simply religious piety, the deliberate religious affirmation. But this was not to be, not so much because one definition is preferable to another, but because in the host culture, in the Western countries, particularly in these United States, the sociological definition of a person of a particular faith is the accepted one. America believes that everybody should somehow have a religion. And so a Christian is anyone who was born of Christian parents. A Jew is anyone who was born of Jewish parents. More generally, a Christian is anyone who isn't a Jew. And a Jew is anyone who isn't a Christian. And it takes an act of public, deliberate conversion for one to escape from the birth label. Otherwise, whether we are indifferent or passionate, we are identified as Jew or as Christian. Now, there was an attempt made in the early days of the church in the United States to define Christian in terms of piety, in terms of belief. The Pilgrim Fathers were not satisfied with baptism by birth, that is, by the inclusion in the Christian community of any infant who once had holy water sprinkled on him. And so they defined the elect within the church, the saints, as those who had accepted the Christ, as those who had known Jesus, as those who had had what William James would later call a conversion experience, who were twice born within the Christian fold. But by and large, there are very few Christian denominations today which do not subscribe a whole family on the church rolls. And I know of no synagogue which makes a demand of that the man or woman who would be a member must make a certain profession of faith or even agree to a certain level of religious practice. Religion in the United States is at the most basic level a matter of family, a matter of sociology, a matter of inheritance. And this fact has had momentous consequences for our Jewish community. For it meant that however far a Jew might roam, whatever other ideologies, political or economic, materialistic, he might adopt, somehow or other, he was brought back at various times of his life, in the eyes of the non-Jewish world, to his Jewish background. The most ordinary and routine level, this meant that when his grandfather died, there was a Jewish funeral. Generally, there was some concern over a rabbi being present at his wedding, and that whatever he may or may not have felt himself to be when he went to buy a house in a particular street, his neighbors either accepted a Jew on that street or refused to sell a house to a Jew. There were many in the 1920s and 1930s who went to the gods of the prophets Marx and Lenin. When those gods failed and they found themselves bereft of faith, suddenly they recognized that in the eyes of the non-Jewish world, and even in the eyes of their comrades, their erstwhile comrades, they had remained Jews. And many went out into this, what was presumed to be the American melting pot, indifferent to the traditions of the immigrant home, eager to participate in the great advantages of Middle America, to be known only for what they were and not by any birth labels, only to find that there was really no melting pot out there, and to find that in the eyes of the non-Jewish world, if not in the eyes of Jews, they remained Jews, and that they, in one way or another, had to confront this their Jewishness at one time or another in their lives. The point I'm trying to make is that the positive values of the Jewish tradition, the warmth, the tight sense of family, the significance of individual dignity within our tradition, the love of learning, the sense of community, of warmth, of participation, the calendar, the thrust, the encouraging thrust of being part of a great historic people, all these positive values would not by themselves have been sufficient to have sustained the immigrant Jewish community or the Jewish community of the first and second generation in their Jewishness with any size, with any elan, with any spirit, had it not been for the sociologizing of religion in America. The fact that we had a lingering label, a label we could not escape even if we wanted to. And when we add to this the fact that from the beginning of this century to now, there have been a series of tragic crises in Jewish life. Jewish life has not known security. We find that there has been reason for the labeled Jew, reasons of loyalty, reasons of stubbornness, reasons of a basic commitment to life, to remain active as a Jew. And so we have the paradox that though we stand after a long century of increasing religious indifference, the American Jewish community is stronger, broader, deeper, more powerful, more vibrant and vigorous today than it has been at any time in its past. The Jew who wanted to join the great anonymous America out there often was driven to the position as he listened to Father Coughlin or to Gerald L. K. Smith or to the Ku Klux Klan, or as he came across the smug, almost unconscious anti-Semitism of the suburb in which he lived, the business in which he worked. He was driven to the fact of saying to himself again and again, "I'm not religious, but I won't shame myself in public. I won't allow others to trample over the dignity of my parents and of my grandparents, the label that I bear." And whether it was the matter of the Tsar and Kishinev of Russia and the pogroms, whether it was the issue of the Nazism in Judenrein Europe and the racist attack on the Jew, whether it was the British white paper and the closing of the doors of Palestine, whether it was the indifference of the countries of the West to the threat to Jewish life in the 30s, which led them to close the doors of immigration in France and England and these United States, whether it was the 2 million Jews who languished in displaced persons camps after the Second World War, whether it has been the four Arab wars which have beset Israel since she came into being, whether it was Arafat strutting at the United Nations, whatever the reason, Jews found good reason to involve themselves in issues of survival. Their brothers, their uncles, their grandfathers, their families were threatened. And Jew after Jew found himself at one time or another saying, "I'm not religious, but I'm stubborn. I won't allow the world to steamroll this people into the ground, to dig mass graves and to shoot them, for ultimately they will shoot me. But more than that, there's a matter of dignity, there's a matter of principle, there's a matter of survival involved. We have been a Jewry in the process of return. And it is the pressure of the outside world, its belligerency, its anti-Semitism, its violence, its indifference to our survival, which has led to this concern with return. Many of the men of my generation who were in the European theater of operations at the end of the Second World War saw the concentration camps and came back to found synagogues. And many of that generation of other generations went to the young pioneering state after it was brought into being and were thrilled by the strength and the accomplishment and the vibrancy and the vitality, the dignity, the sense of pioneering. And they came back to join synagogues and to participate in United Jewish Appeals and to learn Hebrew. Archaeology led many to Bible study. Correspondence with families in Israel led many to Hebraic fluency. Pledge carding, the great activity of our American Jewish community these last 25 years, has led many not only to meet the great and the near great in our Jewish world, but to recognize the complexities of modern Jewish life, to think through the strategies of Jewish survival and even the matter of the faith which underlies the concern for Jewish survival. Ours has been a community in the process of staying alive, threatened and struggling to survive. And the Jew, whatever his religious interest may or may not have been, has found that as he confronted Jewish survival, he had inevitably to confront Jewishness, Judaism. And a strange thing has happened in this American Jewish community, and that is it has gained in strength religiously as well as socially and politically. 25 years ago, 35 years ago, the bulk of the students in the Jewish Theological Seminary, the Hebrew Union College, were immigrant or the sons of immigrants. Today, classes 3, 4, 5 times that size are almost all native-born. We have seen an efflorescence of congregations. There are 3 times the number of congregations in these United States today as they were in 1937, when the American Jewish population was identical in size to what it is now. We have seen the development of youth programs, of camp programs, broadening of religious education to the point where almost 80% of children who are born into Jewish homes receive some Jewish education. 60% of those who go to our universities now take courses in Jewish studies. There's been a remarkable renaissance of Jewish learning, of Jewish interest, not in interest simply in the survival of the Jewish people. We have created our own class of learned men, of scholars, our own literature. More books on serious Jewish themes have been written by American Jews in the last 25 years than the entire century, which we call in our history books the Golden Age of the Jews in Spain. More young people are studying professionally to become adept, to control Jewish learning, to teach it at the university level than in all of our European Jewish experience. It's a remarkable record, brought about largely by the pressures of the world without and by the necessities that these pressures created for all of us to come to grips with our identity, with the why of Jewish survival. Now, all of this is by way of suggesting to you what I think to be the role of the significance of the synagogue in American Jewish life today. I'd like to begin by suggesting to you that if my definition of the thrust of American Jewish life have any meaning and relevance, then the specific role of the synagogue, the American synagogue, I don't mean now the Orthodox synagogue, but the American synagogue, Reform, Conservative, Reconstructionist, the specific role of this synagogue is to make the reentry of Jews into Judaism meaningful and relevant. And it is for that reason I often say to you that I believe that Reform Judaism is dead. And if you give me the chance, if you're not too shocked by that, I add quickly, and I think that Conservative Judaism is dead. And I say that not because critical thought is unnecessary, not because orthodoxy has all of the answers, it does not. But I say that because the Reform and Conservative synagogues grew up in another time to solve another set of problems, a set of problems which are not relevant to our life today. When emancipation began in Europe in the 19th century, there was an amorphous tradition, which we now call Orthodox, and Jews were emerging from this all-embracing tradition which occupied them in their shtetl, in their ghetto, every minute of every day, into the larger world. They needed a religion which allowed them to live in two worlds, a Jewish world and the world of the emancipated Jew, the world out there, the secular society. They needed to express the traditions in a new and more acceptable form. There was a new academic discipline to be learned. There was a new music to be learned. There were new art forms. There was a new emphasis on decorum and on dignity. And all of this led those who were willing to remain Jews to try and create synagogues in which the virtues of the new world, the secular society, and the values of the old world, the Jewish society, would be blended effectively together. And out of that emerged Reform Judaism. And Conservative Judaism is nothing more than the emergence of another wave of Jews into the emancipated society a generation or two later, who were scandalized by where they had seen what they saw of the Reform congregations in Cleveland or Pittsburgh or New York or London or Paris, and who inevitably began then their own process of acculturation. They were a generation or two behind. The mid-Europeans had been emancipated first, so the early congregations tended to be German. The Eastern Europeans emerged from the Pale of Settlement a generation or two later. They began their process of acculturation a generation or two later, so that the conservative congregations tended to be originally Eastern European in their membership. But the process has been a single process, that of an acculturation to an American society or a British society, until of today, both in membership composition and in practice, there is almost no difference between the conservative congregations and the Reform congregations in a given city. They represent an Americanized and a culturized Jewry. They represent a Jewry which assumed religious concern and was simply trying to find a new way of expressing the old religious faith. And I believe that these congregations misunderstood the depth and the degree of religious disinterest which had in fact infected the American Jewish community or the British Jewish community. They continued to define themselves by the Union Prayer Book, by a given form of worship. They continued to define themselves by a given calendar. They continued to assume that those who were members were in fact believing Jews. And that is, in fact, not the case. They were Jews searching for a reason to believe, hoping to find substance within the tradition that they had to stay within in any case. And it seems to me that at this point in time, the old definitions no longer are relevant because all these American congregations are facing a new polity, a new community, a community of Jews who, by
and large, are uncertain in their beliefs, in large measure still indifferent to the matter of belief, but increasingly finding it necessary to give some positive content to their Jewish identity, recognizing that they'll not slip out from underneath it, recognizing that a great amount of their lives, socially, politically, communally, are involved with things Jewish. The average member of a modern Jewish congregation in the United States joins so that his children can have a religious education. And as he joins, he says, or she says, I hope that Judaism will mean more to my children than it meant to me. But in point of fact, he or she, they are searching. And if you want to see the search in it in process, think back to some of the national meetings you attended of Jewish federations, of groups of that kind, 25, 30 years ago. I remember when the Council of Jewish Federations and Welfare Funds used to meet 25, 30 years ago, The issues were daycare centers. The issues were medical care for the indigent. The issues was to whether we were providing adequate social work. The issues was the degree of training of the professionals who were manning these institutions. There was never a Jewish word. There was never an interest in whether or not the convention could run over the Sabbath and hold business meetings on the Sabbath. No scholar was present. No issue of Jewish concern, of Jewish survival, was really central to the business of these federations. But if you go to their meetings now, you find that these issues of the delivery of service are dealt with summarily, and that the large meetings deal with America and Israel, America and Soviet Jewry, the issues of Jewish identity, of Jewish survival. If you look at the budgets of our federations, you'll find not only that a great deal of money goes into the issues of survival, but a great deal of money is being plugged in into the issues of education, the issues of identity, the issues of Jewish culture. All of us, believer and non-believer, are united in the search for the relevance, the impact that Judaism can have on our lives. And the measure of a synagogue today is whether or not it is providing an effective means of religious re-entry, a re-entry into the meaning of Judaism for Jews. Are we, in fact, involved in the issues of adult education? Are the issues that we are discussing, the issues relevant to a community in search? Are we describing what was in the past or what can be in the present? Are we simply raising another generation of children in our schools who will know a few names out of the past? Or are we tying them in effectively with the business of Jewish survival, with pen pals in Israel, with the struggle of the Jewry of the Soviet Union, with the struggle to bring Jewishness into the Jewish community of Cleveland, of the United States? Are we serious in our worship? Do we provide a whole variety of approaches for those who are pious and have always been, for those who are in search and would like to be, and for those who still have to get over the emotional blocks to attending worship in which God is spoken of, in which songs are sung and liturgy is read? Do we provide opportunities for families to come together so that they can relearn some of the songs and some of the practices which their grandparents and great-grandparents had in their homes? Are we religious? Or are we simply going through the motions? The role of a synagogue today is the role of re-entry, is to understand where Jews are in the process of returning, filled with questions, filled with doubt, uncertain that there are really answers, emotionally tentative, fearful of singing out, fearful of
openly and enthusiastically participating in the religious enterprise, because it's not reinforced a great deal in the larger culture. That's where we are. And the synagogue, which is serious and effective, is one which must respond seriously and effectively to these needs, with a worship which is modern and spirited and effective, with various forms of worship, not only for those who have the practice, the discipline, who love God and love worship, but for those who are uncertain, unfamiliar, who are unwilling to participate or unable to participate in any given discipline, who feel more comfortable in an outdoor setting than an indoor setting, in a private setting, in the home rather than the congregational setting? Are we really concerned with offering people the opportunity to come together and to voice the issues which they're unclear about, to open up? Or do we lecture at them endlessly, insisting that they conform to a particular denominational definition of halakha, of the way that one must go? It's not an easy task to run a synagogue today or to be part of a synagogue today. But we must not look upon the synagogue as an end in itself, as if it were a place thronged by believers, all of whom who share the same sociology, the same piety. It is an institution which must provide a whole variety of opportunities, emotional, intellectual, familial, educational, all those in the larger community who accept the label Jew, who want to give it depth, meaning, beauty. The outside world and American sociology have given us a generation or two, given us a chance to reach out to a large number of people. The Jewish community has not atrophied in number. We have not increased in number because of the birth rate, not the rate of defection. We are many, but we are unclear as to the meaning of our loyalties. We know we want to be Jews. We know that we participate, that we give, that we are active in the defense of the Jews of the Soviet Union, in defense of Israel. We know that we are concerned by our own place as Jews in an America which is going through bad times and may go into worse. We know that we are Jews, but that's only the label. We want to fill the label with love and learning, meaning. And that requires concern and participation and a responsive synagogue. Philosopher Emil Fackenheim, Toronto, whom some of you met when we had him speak to our men's club about a year ago on our visit to Toronto, some years ago said that American Jewish, that the diaspora Jewish life now has a new commandment. There were traditionally 613 commandments. Someone bothered to go through the Torah and to list each of the laws of God as numbered in the Torah. 365 of those laws are phrased, thou shalt not, in the negative. 248 of these are phrased in the affirmative, you shall love your neighbor as yourself, and so on, which led to the lovely midrash that every day of the year, all 365 days of the year, with every bone in the body, there are presumably 248 bones in the body, you are to obey the will of God. But he said there is now a 614th commandment. And the commandment is this, that no Jew must allow Hitler a posthumous victory. No Jew must allow Hitler, by his indifference, the Jewish indifference, or listlessness, or by walking away, to gain the end of destroying Jewry that Hitler sought to achieve in his life. We have a positive commitment to Jewish survival. And I think that instinctively the 614th commandment is recognized by the overwhelming majority of Jews throughout the world. I'm convinced of it. I'm also convinced of the fact that the synagogue must still somehow convince Jewry of the rest of the 613. And that's our task. And that's our future. Amen.